Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Sag Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
There's been, obviously, some rough patches with the Cavs to start the year through the first seven games, as expected. But Evan Mobley's trajectory has been one of them, and it's something that I want to get into. As we look through the first seven games for the Cavs, where we stand and what's ahead, as we head out to the Fan Hotline, covers the team for Cleveland.com. Our good friend Ethan Sands joins us now. Ethan, what's going on?
What's going on, Jake? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, good to hear your voice again. We obviously haven't talked since last season, so definitely good to hear from you once again.
Of course. I appreciate you having me on, and as always, I'm ready to get into it.
No doubt about it. All right, Ethan, I got to ask you. Obviously, a lot of off-season moves, and we're very early into this thing. But early on, for you, what's been the biggest difference between this year's early season production or the product versus last year's team?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the difference of the teams is the offensive production coming off the bench, especially when you talk about the amount of injuries that the Cavs have been dealing with and Lonzo Ball's role being in flux, whether he's being with the first unit with Donovan Mitchell or when he's in the second unit where he's coming in off the bench. I think it's his role being in flux has not helped him get acclimated at all, but it has allowed him to kind of get a feel for how he's going to play with multiple different players. And his game is so important for what this Cavs team is going to want to do, especially while they still get these players that have been injured ramp back up the speed, the pace, the kick-aheads, the importance on the offensive end. His ability to keep the ball rolling and humming and without the ball getting stagnant has been extremely important for this Cavs team, especially, and it's most notable when he's not on the floor, because outside of Donovan Mitchell, they haven't had a true creator, which will change or could change tomorrow if Darius Garland makes his season debut.
Obviously, Ethan, that's been the report out there, is that, you know, it could be as soon as tomorrow. They didn't want to confirm it. We're not to that level quite yet, but he could be back as soon as tomorrow. I mean, just how much of an impact have you been able to see from the first seven games? Obviously, you talk about the production off the bench, but just how important that Darius Garland is to this team based on what you've seen in the first seven games?
I think you go back to the playoffs and you can notice it, right? When he first got injured, you could tell that this Cavs team was not the same. And sure, you kind of got lucky playing the Miami Heat in the first round, who weren't truly a playoff team last year. But now going up against the Indiana Pacers, it's like, oh, the pace, the speed, all this kind of goes into what Darius Garland is good at. And he wasn't able to play to his capabilities in that series. So now you kind of get to see it again in what was completely missing in the first seven games, of how he can operate in the offense, get the ball moving, but also his shot making and his shot creation for others. Just his ability to touch the paint and find an open shooter has been missed. The Cavs have lacked that and have at points been one of the worst teams in that profile of getting into the painted area and drives in the entire NBA. Darius Garland is one of the best players because of his shiftiness, his ability to go horizontal, but also go vertical on you to get up and down the floor. I think that's one of the areas where we're going to have the Cavs see him operate the most, but also monitoring him at the beginning when he comes back.
So, it's your best guess. Obviously, we don't know for sure, but what do you expect it to be like when Darius comes back? The ramp-up period, the minutes, the production early on. What does this sort of climb back from where he was last year and coming off this injury look like?
Well, Kenny Atkinson talked about it a little bit today at practice, saying that he was confident in where the conditioning has been because they've given him a good amount of time to ramp up, but is he going to play 32 minutes? No. Is he going to play 20 minutes? Likely not either. So it's going to be somewhere between, I would say, a ballpark of 25 to 28 minutes for the first couple of games when he gets back, because the Cavs do want to see how he's adjusting and going to be able to play for a lot of time, but also don't want to put too much on him when he first is returning to the court.
All right, Ethan, do you feel like the changes that this team has made this offseason in personnel are having the desired effect early on, that the guys that they've brought in to do specific things are actually accomplishing that goal?
My answer to that question would be no, because it would be one out of three, right? Lonzo Ball has been exactly what they thought he would be, but Larry Nance Jr., Thomas Bryant have not, right? They were here to come in and be rebounders, three-point spacers, and all these other things. And Larry Nance Jr. has not played to his capability to the beginning of the season. Thomas Bryant has not gotten the minutes to show what he is capable of on the floor. And I think it's interesting to see where Larry Nance particularly is going to become the playoff time because of what his role could be, but also understanding that this is a player that this Cavs organization loves and trusts and is working to get back to where they need him to be. And I think Larry Nance Jr. is definitely the biggest red flag as of right now when it comes to those offseason acquisitions, but it's still early on, and we're looking to see his shot fall, which is one of the biggest things, but also him averaging 2 to 3 to 4 rebounds a game is not going to cut it for a big man.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, Ethan, it was definitely something that I noticed over the past couple of games, even in pulling back up. I mean, he's 1 for his last 18. He's 0 for 11 from beyond the arc in his last 11 shots from there, which obviously, I mean, he's taking his fair share of. Like, is there a point where we look at this, even, I mean, soon on, as we talk about Darius being back and this rotation getting a little bit bigger, that Thomas Bryant starts to fill that role a little bit more and Larry Nance starts to work into the background even early on?
You would think so, right? But I'm not sure that the Cavs or Kenny Atkinson is viewing Thomas Bryant in that way. And I only say that because of what we haven't seen yet, right? And as these struggles have continued for Larry Nance, he even got a start in the last game playing 25 minutes against the Atlanta Hawks with Jared Allen being out. I thought that could have been a prime opportunity for Thomas Bryant to get more run, but he didn't. He only got 5 minutes, and he played productive minutes. He had 2 blocks and still could not find his way back onto the court for the second half of that contest. So I'm not going to say that they're going to pivot directly, but I do think that there is room for Kenny Atkinson, who has been known to want to experiment and to want to try and get all these guys acclimated into this system, that he should be playing with rotations and Thomas Bryant, especially when we still have so many players injured. And obviously, again, that could change this week.
Ethan Sands, Cleveland.com, with this here on the Fan Hotline. So obviously one of the big things pointed to in the playoffs last year was like, hey, this team just doesn't have enough, like, I basically dogging them, right? They need a little bit more physicality. They need a little bit more to it. Do you feel like that they have that right now, or are they still lacking it?
I think there are players that are showing different sparks of that dog mentality. And I'm going to highlight Jalen Tyson here because he's a guy that has come into this role as a second-year player and has said that he is willing to take on the role of the villain if it is necessary for this team. Because I think there is an understanding, not only in the players, but in the entire organization, that there is a mental toughness hurdle that needs to be overcome this year for them to get to where they want to go. And to do that, they have to be able to win games even when it's hard. And that's kind of a conversation we've continuously had with Donovan Mitchell and his kind of what he says in his lineups is determination over negativity, which allows him to just get through things even when it's difficult. And that is something that he's tried to instill in not only the rookies, but into everybody, because it's not necessarily what you do, but how you get it done and how difficult the task was while doing that.
I mean, you obviously highlight Jalen Tyson. I mean, how surprised have you been at his production this year? I mean, I'm looking at him make multiple starts in absences with injuries. I'm watching him be more confident shooting the ball, and we knew he could be good offensively at Cal. But, like, it feels like he's taken a dramatic step up even from where he was last year and could potentially have a major role with this team, even when healthy.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, toot my own horn and say I wasn't surprised fully, but, like, when you go back to last year, he was in the gym the entire time. Like, there were multiple times last year where Donovan Mitchell and Kenny Atkinson were joking, like, please go home. You have been here all day. You have been here the entire weekend. Go home. Do something else. Because he is a guy that is a workhorse, that is willing to put in the work, and you got to see that transpire. And sure, last year probably the biggest transition had to be his jump shot getting quicker. It's been smoother. And when you hear about it in training camp when they were in IMG Academy and, like, he was one of the best shooters on the floor, that kind of gave me the indication that there was a change. There was something that happened for him over the summer that has allowed him to be more confident. And part of that is just knowing that necessarily you're not going to come off the floor if you make a mistake or if you miss a few shots, right? Because especially what this offense needed was a creator and someone who could knock down shots. And Kenny Atkinson has continuously opened the door for that for his players and allowed them to play free. And Jalen Tyson is just being added to that category, especially in his second year and coming off the bench or starting.
Ethan, go ahead. Toot your own horn, okay? I don't hold anybody back here, okay? If you called it, you called it. Toot your own horn. We're all right with that.
I appreciate that. I try not to, but, like, he's just a guy that you've watched, even if it was just year one. But Donovan Mitchell has preached about it. Kenny Atkinson has preached about it. The players around have preached about his work ethic and what he is capable of. And, obviously, his role isn't going to change significantly when players get back because his mindset is more defense-oriented. The offense has just been good going along with it. But his defense has been able to shift how this Cavs team has thought. His peskiness, his defensive intensity, his just overall drive to want to be the guy to help out in any possible way. And obviously, you scoring 18 or more points in the last three contests is definitely going to help people catch on to your story a little bit quicker.
All right, Ethan, you're going to have an opportunity just to call me dumb. You're going to tell me if what I'm looking at, if I'm just absolutely crazy. But I'm sitting here and I'm watching Evan Mobley play, and there's a level of concern for me just watching him play. Not that obviously he's a bad player because he still looks really good out there, but that maybe necessarily hasn't taken the jumps desired for this team to be a championship level contender where he can be a 1A, 1B with Donovan. Are those concerns real and how high are they right now?
I think there are valid concerns, right? You can have the conversation of whether or not his personality and aura or whatever the kids are saying nowadays is up to task to be an offensive focal point of a contention team. But I also think I want to make you maybe push the brakes on that a little bit just because it is only seven games in. He hasn't had one of the best creators in the entire NBA in Darius Garland. He's had to have the ball in his hands more. He's had to start his offensive sets from the top of the key rather than in the dunker spot or at the elbow or the free throw line where he's more comfortable. So I definitely think that there's different things that the Cavs have noticed about his game and where he can be successful. And then still, maybe you get some paint touches, which is most important right now for them, and get him started in the offense and get his confidence going, seeing the ball go through the basket. Then you expand to the three-point line, and that allows the defenses or forces the defenses to kind of adjust their philosophies when it comes to Evan. And I think he's being scouted differently, right? There are teams that are actually, as soon as he touches the paint, they're swarming him with two, three defenders, and he has to make the right play. And I think there have been multiple times this season where Evan Mobley has made those right plays, but there's also times where they have led to turnovers or at the very beginning of the season where he was over-forcing it and going 3v1 in situations where he shouldn't have. So, sure, I will say that there are concerns that could be made, but it's game seven of the NBA season for the 2025-2026 year. I want to pump some brakes here and say that this is a player that the Cavs have believed in since they drafted him, and they're going to continue to believe in that, and Donovan Mitchell is still going to try and give him the reins to be an also offensive focal point because he understands what that means for their ceiling of an NBA championship and trying to get there.
Again, Ethan Sands with this here on the hotline. When does that concern, like, when would that be more of a concern for you then? When Darius is back, how much of a leeway and a rope are you giving Evan before you feel genuinely concerned?
All-star break, definitely. Like, if you are an all-star and you're, again, for the second time in your career, and you get named to that list, and then you're still struggling to be an offensive focal point of a team that is who knows where they're at in the pack at this point in the NBA standings. But I think that's where we look to see when Evan Mobley could have real concerns, because we know, like, if you were going to be a dog in this league, that goes back to that dog, that mental toughness, that mentality, you have to, like, be outspoken. You can't be half-stepping about it. And Evan Mobley has had a demeanor change, and he's had, like, his words have more validity to them this season, but it feels like he still talks quietly a little bit, and he still is, like, trying to figure it out. But once he does figure it out, if he does figure it out, I think that's when this Cavs team can be more dangerous. And obviously Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell on the floor together with him are going to draw more attention, and then that's going to help him create more space and be more free as well, more than just being the number one option on the floor with Donovan Mitchell and him splitting minutes to start the season. And the entire defensive scheme is for Evan Mobley.
All right, Ethan, I'm going to ask you here. I got a couple more for you. NBA Cup, do we like it? Do we not like it at this point?
I like it. I'm a big fan of the NBA Cup. I'm a guy who thinks anything that ramps up the intensity or the participation level for anybody in the league, I think that's a good thing. Plus, you look at the prize money as well, and that not only helps the players who are on minimum contracts, but also two-way guys. And that's kind of something that LeBron had talked about when they first won it, right? I definitely think that it helps out those players and gives everybody more to play for. So I'm not on the bus of people saying, oh, it's just a regular season game, it doesn't necessarily matter. No, I think we've seen it, right, with the NBA Cup at least a couple of times now, that players, coaches, organizations, they get up for these games. And this Cavs team in particular wants to make it to Vegas. They want to get to that second round. They have yet to do so since this has been a thing. And I think that's a driving point for them. Obviously, they lost their first game of group play, so it doesn't necessarily help them. But they're going to try their hardest to be a wild card spot team if that's the way that they can get in.
All right, Ethan, we got to run, but I appreciate you, as always, setting aside the time. Always good to talk to you. I look forward to talking to you more here as the season rolls on.
Jake, I appreciate you having me on, buddy. I appreciate it, and I will be ready for you anytime you need me.
Thank you very much. Have a good night, Ethan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
You too.
I don't know where I was going that. I completely lost my train of thought. Didn't know how to get words out. But Ethan Sands of Cleveland.com with us there on the fan hotline. We're going to react to some of the good stuff Ethan had to say, a lot of it. And when does true concern set in for Evan Mobley? 216-474-0092. We get to it in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick on the fan. Set in for Evan Mobley and the struggles that he's had so far this year. And it's not even that, again, I don't want to paint this out as like, oh, Evan has been a bad player for the Cavs this season. No, certainly not. I mean, he's averaging 19-9-4, and he's got like two steals a game. He's averaging over a block a game, as he commonly does. Looks great defensively, as he always does. Like, the offensive struggles have certainly been there. And I have, I guess, the most fear there, because it's where if you're going to see a step up from this team, if there's going to be a spot where it feels like now you're a true championship contender, more than you just are right now. You're still the favorite in the East, even the way that Evan Mobley has played, even the way if you would have just gotten the Evan Mobley that you had last year, you'd still be favorites in the East. And you'd be right up there with the Knicks. But if you're going to talk about a true championship contender, I just don't know that I see that right now with Evan. Like, can you take on a team like the Thunder with Evan currently playing the way that he is? I don't know. Like, if we go back through a couple of his last games, Last time out against Atlanta in a win, 6 of 16, just had 14 points. And then obviously he had the Toronto game, but he played 36 minutes, which isn't that outside the normal. But, like, he also didn't have Donovan. He didn't have Jared Allen on the floor. He put up 29 and the Cavs lost. But you just go through and it's like, okay, I'm not even watching 20-point performances. And by the way, guys, Darius isn't there. Like, I feel like I should be watching 20-point performance after 20-point performance. I should see it, Evan Mobley, that's demanding the basketball, that's aggressive, that is going at the rim and attacking teams. And I just don't still feel like I'm getting that version of him right now. I feel like I'm still missing it in the current spot that we're at. And I don't know when I'm ever going to get that climb over. Right now, I'm looking at the exact same Evan Mobley that looks like I had last year. And sure, Darius coming back, I think, puts him in better positions. Like, the field goal percentage is obviously struggling. It's sub 50% right now, which is way out of the normal for Evan Mobley. That probably gets better. Ethan talked about it. Like, you're probably getting more sets for him at the block, inside the paint, at the free throw line, where those are, you know, where he's actually getting the ball and getting to start attacking from rather than the top of the key. But that's not even the overall fix. It's like, I just want to see Evan be the aggressor in these situations. I want him to be the guy that feels like he's constantly on attack mode and is going at other teams, because we see it when he does it. Like, when he's constantly going to the rim, when he's trying to be the guy that's dominant, there's flashes and moments where it looks incredible. Like, he looks like he is a top-tier player in the league. He looks like he can be a 1B. It's the problem that that's only 20% of the time. Like, I need to see that version of Evan Mobley just way more often, almost at all times. Again, if you're going to be a 1A, 1B, like, there's not moments in games. Well, we have had one, because we had it in one of the more recent games with Donovan Mitchell, where it felt like Donovan just kind of withered away and wasn't the same player and had gone silent for basically three straight quarters. But you almost never get that with Donovan. Like, he's an attacker. Donovan's a killer. He'll constantly go at you. He'll constantly attack the hoop because he knows that he's a star. With Evan, it feels like there's constant times where he forgets that he's supposed to be a star. Like, you're supposed to have an attitude towards you. You're supposed to have a swagger to you, at least on the court. I don't care what your mentality is off the court. I don't. Like, if you want to be the soft-spoken, quieter guy when you're off the floor and you don't want to talk your talk, that's you. That's your personality. Doesn't really matter to me. It bothers me when it transitions on the floor. Like, when I can actively see that version of you coming through in your game, that's not a star player. As a guy who just won Defensive Player of the Year, as a guy who's an all-star, you're supposed to be more than that. And the fear right now is that the guy, I'm looking at the ceiling of Evan Mobley, and I constantly hear people tell me that, oh, well, it's MVP candidate. It could be top five type of player in the league, as I've watched Evan Mobley for 5 years. Like, we're still trying to climb to this point. I mean, 95% of the time we talk about players when they're dominant and they look like they're going to be a top five player, they might not be that top five player in their first, like, 2 to 3 years in the NBA, but you can see the potential and the fact that they're getting there. I've seen Evan make drastic improvements to become a better player. Obviously, has improved his outside shot dramatically and is actually confident shooting the ball from beyond the perimeter. Okay, it's a great climb to make. Like, I'm still not seeing the top five version player of Evan Mobley. Like, I don't know how much longer you can continue to claim, like, oh, Evan just needs to progress. He needs to continue to get better. That's untapped potential is still there. Yes, he's 24, but again, 5 years in the league. Like, I don't know how much growth you continue to have and how much better you get in your game. Like, Evan Mobley's handle. Does Evan Mobley's handle actually ever take the climb to being able to consistently dribble the basketball and be a guy who can attack from the top of the key? I would say not. Like, I don't think that's ever going to be there. If you can't figure that out by now, I don't know that you're ever going to figure it out. Like, I can watch Wemby put the ball in his hand and be an absolute freak of nature. And yes, Wemby's one of the best players in the NBA, and that's hands down, no question asked. He's a better player than Evan Mobley. Like, I'm watching a guy who, you know, has a more similar build to Evan. He's obviously taller, but he's lanky, and it is that same thing. You would expect the dribbles to be slower. Wemby's figured out how to make that work for him. He can dribble the basketball. He can be basically running the point. It's like, I feel like that's the type of player that we talk about. Oh, this is what Evan Mobley can be. And I'm just not seeing it. I don't even need you to be Wemby level type of player. I just need you to be an aggressor and a guy who can constantly work with the ball in his hands. I need you a guy that is constantly attacking the rim. Like, again, there's bigger players in the league who don't have an insane handle. Like, I mean, Jokic is obviously the easy one to point to. You can point to guys like Giannis, who obviously has a bigger frame to him. But, like, Jokic, I mean, he's got a good bag, but he's got, like, the old guy at the YMCA bag. Like, it's slow, but he can still dribble the ball consistently in the NBA. Like, he can bring the ball up the floor and be a consistent ball handler. I just don't know that you ever get that from Evan. So I need you to be a lot more aggressive in other areas. And right now, I just feel like I'm not getting it. I'm willing to give Evan the leeway until Darius comes back. Like, bring back Darius Garland, get him healthy, get him wrapped up. Ethan said until the All-Star break is basically where he's looking at. If Evan Mobley can't go into the All-Star break looking like that dominant player, then there's a level of concern. Okay, I'll give it to you. I'll ride with Ethan on this one. I'll say you have until the All-Star break to actually prove something to me. But I'm coming in with my doubts. Like, I just don't know that Darius being on the floor is what takes Evan up to the next level. Because, yes, some of the areas might be better. You might be able to work better offensively. But if you're going to be a focal point for the offense, it feels like there's a lot of ways that Darius takes away from that, too. Like, Darius gets his. He puts points on the board. Donovan has to get his. He puts points on the board. You're talking about Evan Mobley having to basically upstage, but not in a poor way, but upstage Darius Garland and look like he's more of a focal point of the offense. I'm still waiting for those moments where I can feel like that's true. I feel like Darius has been a missing piece that this team has desperately needed, right? Like, I watched Donovan kind of run the point, and it's fine. It works okay at times. Lonzo has been really good for them. But I can see just the impact that Darius makes with him not being out there, is being a distributor of the basketball, is being a guy who, like Ethan mentioned as well, can attack the lane, which is something this team is desperately needing. But I just don't know that truly opens up the floor entirely for Evan Mobley. Like, it feels like it needs to consistently be Evan to take that step. That's what bothers me the most. Is, sure, you can add Darius in. Maybe things look a little better. But my problem with Evan is not that he's not getting the ball enough. He's not getting the ball in great enough areas. It's the fact that when I watch Evan play, there's times where he's timid and there's times where he makes the wrong decision. And instead of just going at the rim or, you know, when that triple team comes, passing out of it, making the right decision, that Evan decides that he's going to do a fadeaway. It's like, that's not the best shot we're taking. That's not the indication of a guy who is the size that you are and as dominant as we want you to be. Needs to be the guy attacking the rim. That needs to be the guy getting to the free throw line. It is a mentality thing with Evan Mobley that we have continued to miss over and over and over again with him that I just don't see the change coming. He feels like the same player to me last year that he is this year. That's not going to fly. Like, you're going to have to be an improved player. And I don't know when that moment comes from Evan, if it's not right now, if it's not when Darius gets back, if it's not by the All-Star break, I fear that it'll never be there. 216-474-0092. When does true concern set in for you on Evan Mobley not being aggressive enough in the production, just not being there? We get back to the Browns as well with a little Ohio State tossed in as the college football playoff rankings, the first edition, are officially out right now. It's all coming your way in 5 minutes in overtime with Jake Volnick right here on The Fan. And I was telling you guys, it feels like for me, it's right now. I'm willing to give him towards the All-Star break, but I didn't want to go out to the phones. Dre is in Cleveland and wanted to chime in. Dre, what's going on?
Man, I don't know. I kind of disagree, man. I think Mobley is a whole different player with Garland out there at QB, man. Like, literally, he's going to get more lobs, more spacing on the floor. Right now, Mobley's out there, man. Like, and I don't know what's going on with our coach, man, where he just lets everybody have free reign and jack up 100 threes a game, man, and Mobley out top trying to create driving lanes and off the handle. He don't got those kind of handles, bro. Like, literally, it make my skin crawl seeing that dude out there trying to create his own shots, man. And he right now, without Garland out there, Jake, I believe he's being exposed because I don't see a jump at all. Now, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and Dre, that's kind of where my fear lies, and I appreciate the call. I think that's kind of where the fear lies for me is, like, sure, like, Evan can be a better player, hands down, with Darius out there. Like, I do think it gets better when Darius gets onto the court. Like, in some ways, right? Like, I think that a lot of things open up, and I agree with Ethan that, like, he'll get the ball in more advantageous spots. But I don't know that, like, the statistical production goes up when Darius goes out there. And he is being exposed right now. Like, where is the jump? Like, this is the part that concerns me with Evan. It's not that he's not a good player. It's not that he's not great. It's Sure. Right now, are you being asked to do things that maybe Evan's not strong at? Yeah, because, I mean, really, where else does it come from right now, guys? Like, if it's not Evan, who are you asking to create for this team? Like, Lonzo's not a creator. He's a distributor. He's a good. I mean, you called Darius a quarterback. I'll do that for Lonzo. I think Lonzo's a good quarterback of an offense. I think, obviously, he's tremendous defensively. Like, I don't know where else you turn, but that's part of the problem, is I'm supposed to be able to turn to Evan Mobley. If I feel like I have three true stars, which I feel like the Cavs would tell you that they have, in both in all of Donovan, Evan, and Darius. Evan's not...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking like the star. Like, stars are able to do those things. Stars are able to take over games. They're able to act as if they are the number one player on the floor. If you have multiple of them, those guys trade off and they look like the best player on the floor at times. Look at any other team where you think they have multiple stars. You go, if that guy's the lone star in the game, he can take the ball and he can be dominant. Like, and I think that's a different point from where we were previously in the NBA. Like, Shaq's the only player on the floor. It's not like you can just hand Shaq the ball. Like, you have to feed him inside. If you get it to him in the right spot, yeah, absolutely, he's dominant. Like, you don't have those type of players right now, really, in the NBA. Like, the big has transformed to the point where they need to feel like they do everything. And you have Jokic's, you have Giannis's. They can put the ball on the floor. They can be effective in doing so. They can run the floor. They get the ball at the top of the key and be effective. Like, the idea that, you know, you have a great big man who is just a big man, who is just a guy that can score inside and rebound, is kind of gone away. And right now, like, Cavs aren't particularly a great rebounding team in their current moment. Evan Mobley is part of that problem. Like, Jared Allen has been healthy for a majority of the season, a chunk of it, like 5 out of the 7 games so far. They still haven't been a great rebounding team, but it just feels like Evan is missing that superstar factor. He's an all-star. He's an all-star level player. He's really good. I just haven't seen the superstar level of it. That's the part that concerns me, because if you're going to win a championship, more likely than not at this point, you kind of need two of those guys. You need at least, you know, a superstar and a star, if you don't want to go to the level of superstar. I just think Evan Mobley's a touch below that. I would probably make the argument that Darius is a touch below that. You're trying to supplement it by saying Evan's going to get better. I just don't know when that comes. But all right, let's leave the Cavs talk there for now. I did want to get to the college football playoff rankings that have come out. The projected bracket is here as well. And let me just say, thank God. I was going to have to scream into this mic. I was going to have to get angry if they put Ohio State anywhere but one, but they are the number one team. Like, Michael, you had mentioned that you thought there was a decent shot that Indiana was going to get that one.
Yes, I did. I thought that they would honor the resume. I thought they would say that the win at Oregon for Indiana was worth more to them than Ohio State's win at home against Texas. And then I thought they might try to play, you know, what is it called? Distributive property against Illinois, stuff like that. So I thought that there was a chance, but I'm with you. I think, in terms of game control and strength of the overall record and team, they're clearly number one to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, the way that they've dominated this one, like, the Texas game obviously looked ugly. You found a way to win that game. It was Julian Sain's first start in college football. Like, let's give the kid a break, okay? Like, they were trying to ramp him up. They were trying to get him to the spot. They relied heavily on the defense. Okay, you still went out there and you beat Texas. And since then, the closest game that you've played has been a 24-6 win over Washington. Was ranked 24th at the time. You played Illinois, who was obviously previously ranked during the season before Indiana just put an absolute spanking on them. But, like, you took down Penn State handedly, which obviously was a game that didn't hold as much value at this point, but still good defense. Like, you've played the teams in front of you. In a lot of ways, you scheduled tough games. It's just when the games rolled around, maybe they didn't feel all that tough. But I had people going out there. Pete Futek was on Afternoon Drive, and we were talking to him before the Washington game when I was filling in for JP at the time. And he told me, he was like, Ohio State could be on upset watch against Washington, 24-6. Like, the game wasn't even close. Felt like it was over, and Ohio State had control the entire way. The score was obviously not, like, completely dominant, but they had control of that game. Just like, you put Ohio State anywhere but one, yeah, I was going to sit here and I was going to scream. Because they've looked like the most dominant. They've looked like really the only dominant team. Indiana's looked really good, not taking that away from them. But if we're talking about pure dominance, a team that looks like they're in full control on both sides of the ball, we're talking about a year that was talked about as a potential sort of setback reset year for the Ohio State offense because they were losing a ton of guys. They obviously lost Will Howard. They were going to a redshirt freshman in Julian Say. It was like, okay, sure. Like I could see the potential setback. Julian Sain is now the Heisman favorite. Like, I don't know how we get to a point where we say that's not the best. The defense has been the number one defense in the country. No questions asked. They look like an NFL defense more than they look like a college defense. And oh, by the way, that was while replacing a majority of their starters as well. It's like, I don't know what else more you have to prove. Again, you play the teams in front of you. I'm sorry that the schedule doesn't look that great. I wish it could look better. There's a handful of ranked opponents that when it came around to play them, just weren't ranked. Like, not my fault that Penn State crumbled and wanted to lose to UCLA. They're on my schedule. I tried. I scheduled Texas. I did what I could. And then you got Michigan coming up at the end of the year. And every game in between that should basically be a coast game. You should have no worries. Ohio State should have no business leaving from that one spot as long as, you know, they don't lose a game. Like, I'm sorry. Yes, schedule matters for Indiana. Okay. You know, come meet me in the Big Ten championship game then. Like, go play me there if you really want to prove it and take the number one spot.
Yeah, I know that they did ask the chairman about the Ohio State ranking. Obviously, I have no idea what was said there. I do think that they do value the Washington win. Iowa is also ranked, actually, mm-hmm. in the committee poll, and that's a win that Indiana has, you know, in Kinnick. But I think, Jake, you hit the nail on the head, like, in terms of game control. Like, outside of maybe when Arch was driving Texas down the field there, down 14-7, at what point during the season has anyone felt Ohio State was going to lose a football game?
That was the only
even
game.
Then, you didn't feel like it, but it was like, okay, if Texas sends it to overtime, maybe.
Yeah.
But that was it.
And again, it was because I was watching, I don't want to call Ohio State's offense anemic at that point, but I mean, it was close. Like, they weren't good. There was nothing really positive to point to. It was a clear defensive game. And it was like, okay, like that was the only reason that there was any fear in week one. If you would have put the team that's out there right now offensively on the field again against Texas, both teams' current state, I don't think that game, I'm not saying it would be like a 40-point blowout, but would probably not be a game separated by 7 points and certainly would not be 14-7. Like, Texas has not looked nearly as good, who, by the way, sits as the first team out here as the 11 seed. A couple of interesting matchups. Obviously, these are going to fluctuate as the year goes on. It's just where it's projected at. I know a fun one that Michael had pointed out during the break was Notre Dame-BYU. Obviously, you know, you take Catholics and convicts, and you go down a different route with Notre Dame and BYU. That gets really interesting. And you got Texas A&M in there, well-deserved. Alabama's the 4 seed, pretty well-deserved. I mean, that team's looked, they obviously had struggles early on in the year, but they've bounced back in a big way. These are going to fluctuate so much. Again, Ohio State was the big one for me. Like, just put them over Indiana, and I'm not going to have a ton of fear. That's really the only thing that I feel like I could look at right now. Like, does anybody actually, like, do we get excited for the first college football playoff rankings? Like, is this something we do? You guys can chime in at 216-474-0092. Like, I feel like if Ohio State was in a more, I don't know, debatable position, I guess is the word that I'll use. If they were in a spot where I looked at them and I go, okay, well, you know, are they going to be the 5 seed? Or they could go all the way to the 9 seed? Sure. Should have been no questions asked. This was the number one seed in the playoffs, and I just don't think there was much of an argument. Sure, Indiana had the closest thing to an argument. I just don't think that as a committee you could look at this. And sure, you factor in all of the things that you can just look at the schedule and based on statistics. If you also just watch the games with your own two eyes, Indiana looks really good. They don't look like Ohio State. Like, they don't look like as a complete team as Ohio State. They have not, I don't want to say they haven't been as dominant because they have been very dominant. Like, Ohio State has felt like they're in full control of the season, has not come close. I just think this is it's kind of the only odd thing for me is that I feel like we've had the consistency of like the college football playoffs, especially when we're talking about a 4-team college football playoff, kind of looked relatively the same from year to year. I feel like this is the first year where I'm looking at the teams that are there and I'm like, it almost feels like there's a handful of these teams missing. Like, it just this year has been so odd for college football that, like, we're talking about Texas A&M is a top four seed. Texas Tech is in the mix. Obviously, BYU. And then obviously, the group of five thing is just dumb to me. Absolutely. Like, the fact that Memphis right now, and I get it, they're, I think, by the AP poll, a top 25 team right now.
They are unranked by the committee.
Yes. They are not inside the top 25. So we're missing out on a team like Texas, a team like Oklahoma, a Vandy, who has two good losses on their schedule. And we're going to put Memphis on there. Who's going to win? Hey, what conference? The AAC?
The American.
Yeah. We're going... I mean, we're going to the AAC for a team just because we need to get a group of five in there. Memphis is not that great of a team. Like, they've not been that impressive to me, where clearly they don't make the committee's top 25. That's the only thing. Like, do I really need to see Memphis play Georgia? Like, as a five seed, sure, you can say that you deserve it to play the 12 seed that's going to be the group of five. But, like, I don't really need to see that. Do I need to see... I mean, Virginia's been good this year. I don't want to take that away from them. Are they really deserving of a college football playoff spot right now? Does Virginia actually put up a fight against Ole Miss? I don't know. But I know Memphis isn't putting up that good of a fight against Georgia. Like, just take it away. Just give me back to somewhere normal where I feel like it's good. But overall, like, I don't think it's bad. I think this is a fine ranking. I mean, they kind of went really generic with it. Like, was there anything that actually stood out to you of a team that's there or isn't there that you expected to be there?
I mean, no. Like, you look at the Virginia spot, that's literally just the ACC spot, so that's going to go to them, Louisville, Georgia Tech, maybe. I mean, maybe Miami finds its way in there. So, like, ignore that. BYU, Texas Tech maybe feel a tad high. I don't know. I might still have Texas Tech over BYU, but I understand you got to respect the undefeated. They're going to play this weekend. So... like I said, I didn't really have a problem with it at all. Like I said, yeah, the Memphis thing's weird, but that's the way it goes. And Texas will sort itself out. Like, if they keep winning, they're going to get in.
Yeah,
so there's nothing to worry about.
We're looking at basically the way that this panned out in a lot of ways was like one loss teams got in, and it just panned out for the number that a lot of the two loss teams are currently on the outside looking in. Like, it felt like this is a very vanilla view on here's your college football playoff rankings. Okay, go change them. And we know that when you start putting strength of schedule to the test, which is going to happen for a couple of these teams down the back end, when you start talking about potential conference championships for some of these teams, that like it might just play out where if you get a quality win, again, you're going to force your way in. You're going to overcome the teams with one win, or if those teams drop off a bad game. Clearly, your teams like Virginia or your teams like Texas Tech are going to be the teams that are going to get knocked out. But all of the teams who basically didn't make it are two lost teams. Like I talked about with Texas, like Oklahoma being the first two teams out. Yeah, they're two lost teams. Who are you going to put them over?
Yeah, I actually thought the bottom of the rankings are where my probably biggest takeaway was. I think it's a great showing for the Big Ten. They got Iowa in there. USC is in there. Michigan's in there. Washington is ranked. Like, they kind of got the treatment that the SEC's been getting for years, which a lot of those teams are getting in at the back end of the rankings, which are going to bolster up the resumes of the top three for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, definitely something to keep an eye on is obviously this is going to play out throughout the end of the college football playoff season, or the end of college football season into the college football playoffs. But yeah, I mean, there's also just no surprise, Big Ten SEC dominance. I mean, this is what we've all been talking about the entire time and why the Big Ten and the SEC are clamoring for more of their teams to have guaranteed bids. Don't know that I love that either, but like, it's why they're clamoring for it. You're looking at it and you're watching a bunch of SEC teams get in. You're looking at a bunch of Big Ten teams get in. That's the majority of the college football playoff right now. 216-474-0092. Would you have been upset if Ohio State was anywhere but one? And Get a Grip coming your way in 5 minutes and overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.